Okay, here we go. Something. We came to hijack something, your brain. Something. We came to hijack something. Your brain.
We say what we like and have a blast.
Something.
You are listening to
something.
Okay, here we go.
Welcome, everybody. It is time for a deep and dark, a thrilling episode of the Something Something Cast.
Something Something Cast.
I'm James Hatton.
I'm dizzy now. Yeah. A little lightheaded from that.
I think we're trying too hard.
But like, I wasn't ready for the deep and dark and scary. And I was like, oh my God, I can't just whisper. I have to do something. And I wasn't prepared for it, and I got a little lightheaded right at the end of that, I'm not going to lie.
I mean, last week was Halloween, and because it's a five-weeker, they're getting two, so I figured I'd go a little weird.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it actually plays the theme today, but first, before we get to theme, we should discuss sponsors.
Yes,
I'm sure if you've listened to this show, you might be saying to yourself, Jamie, is this a commercial for audibletrial.com/something? And yes, funny enough, it is. If you go to audibletrial.com/something, you'll get not only a free audiobook from their huge selection, you will also get all of the benefits and memberships and cool stuff that Audible members get. That includes one credit for whatever book you want. That includes big sales on and deep discounts on your choice of audiobooks. For example, you could go and get Denis O'Neill's Batman and Psychology, A Dark and Stormy Night, with a K-N, because they're smart like that, narrated by Mike Chamberlain. Or you could get Batman and Philosophy, also narrated by Mark D. White. Which is about the philosophy of the bat. These are available on audibletrial.com/something. Get your 30-day trial now. It'll help us out.
Absolutely.
There we go. Got that.
So, so all those titles that you happened to mention in there.
Yeah, philosophy, psychology. They're deep topics. I figured they related to what we're going for here. You know, a little. This is our episode about Kant. Immanuel Kant.
Oh. Yeah, I've heard he was a real pissant. It was very rarely stable.
That was quick.
Yeah.
That was really quick. No, of course, this episode is going to the deep, dark cities of Gotham.
It is. And not the TV show.
No.
We're talking about the comic book. We're talking about he who protects all of Gotham, the Caped Crusader himself.
Danny Batman. Elfman's boy.
Batman.
Or Batman, Robin.
So
yeah, I mean, we're trying something different on this one. This is a bit open forum on just the bat.
Yeah,
which I think is kind of a cool idea. There's a lot to talk. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there.
We had kind of set up when we started the whole new weekly show thing that if we ever had a 5-week month, instead of skewing the release dates for what we were doing. The fifth week was just going to be, hey, we're going to bullshit and talk about, you know, whatever we want. So, right. Here it is. You get to hear us talk about Batman.
No, 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 no. An hour later. No, 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 no.
Podcast.
So, I will admit, I've never actually, I've read Batman comics.
Yes.
I've read things like Arkham Asylum, and I've read, I've read books. Year One, Long Halloween. I've never been reading the sequential serial Bat story Batman guy.
Okay.
I've only sort
so
of
more
hit
of a
on...
one. You're more of a one shotter kind of guy.
Yeah, I know I've read. You know what? I've probably read. I read when Bane broke his back. What is that? Nightfall? That happened in.
Yes.
Like I read that. Mm-hmm. So a couple of the incontinuity biggins. But yeah, for the most part, it's always been just the graphic trades because I was the same way about Spider-Man until Straczynski wrote him. So what about yourself?
I collected a lot of Batman titles, and it's, I mean, when I was in my heyday of collecting,
back when comics were printed on stone.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It only had four colors. And you've collected comics.
Yeah. Well,
so,
yeah.
You know, between the ones that come out every other month, every other week, every week, you get that one week, like every 2 months, where it's like, and your box is $475 worth of comics. And you're like, what the fuck? Because they all came in at once.
Yeah, exactly. Can I get an installment plan?
Yeah. So it was never like, I've never read Batman before. Let me get the Batman. No, it was the Batman. And then it was the detective. And then it was,
Shadow of the Bat.
Exactly. He had so many titles. And that wasn't even counting, like, the one-shots. It was...
And Justice League.
My comic book box had multiple... Bat books. So yeah, I was a bat reader.
Okay. I mean, is there an era, a specific bat era that you were super into? Because I obviously don't have one. But I figure
I really liked the Jim Aparo stuff. I really liked his art style. I really liked the Breyfogle stuff because it was a lot more stylistic. It had almost kind of like a pulpy noir kind of feel to it.
Okay.
One of my favorites, who was a writer or an artist on an indie comic for a very long time, he did some Batman stuff. I'm
Googling as fast as he can.
Yes, my brain is completely fucking shot. For those of you who may or may not have known, this is the first episode we are recording in Studio 2 for Rob. I have since moved into a new place.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. And... yeah, literally like 45 minutes before we started recording, I was unpacking boxes still. So, little frazzled, but we're making it work. The artist in question is Flint Henry.
Oh, okay.
He did some really cool Batman stuff where Batman became demonic. So he had like these taloned feet, and the cowl was actually like a hooked nose to it and everything. And it was very... If you're a huge Batman fan, you probably look at it and go, what's this about? But if you're a Flint Henry fan, you're like, this is fucking Flint Henry. This is awesome.
So it was, did Batman go feral, or was it just his art style that made the bat look feral?
No, in that story art, he did go a little feral. Okay. Yeah, there was a little summoning circles going on and a little tapping into things he probably shouldn't have.
That's... sort of leads to the different eras of Bat. I mean, it was... I have a lot of the DC Showcase books, which are the black and white phone books.
Oh, right.
Just all Silver Age stuff. And reading those comics, and let me tell you, I've mentioned they're perfect bathroom reading.
Yeah.
To just go and sit and read, like, a 6 to 10 page silver comic where Batman's going to go stop the... infamous question, and it's not the question that is in DC continuity now. It's just some dude,
right?
Who one day probably become the Riddler or something akin, but now he's just the indomitable thingy, and just these little 10-page sort of blahs, and they set the stage for what we know about Batman. But they're all very light, and they're all very cheesy in that sort of charming Silver Age way.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, there's tons of books. There's Detective, and then there's the Batman book. Even, I would say, as far back as the Silver Age, there was... and the Justice League, where Batman was part of those. And those, my friend, are the get. Because No matter the issue, you have, like, a monster that surprisingly breaks up into 5 different sub-monsters. And each one of the Justice League goes and faces off against them. And that monster, each one of the tendrils, or thingies... widgets, robots, whatever they are, has somebody that's good against that particular Justice League person. It happened,
right.
Like, I don't understand how comics even became a thing, because by after reading probably a year of those comics, I was just like, they're just ripping themselves off at this point.
Yeah.
But I love those old Bat stories. They're super fun. It's just him punching goons and trying to solve what happened to the Clockman Diamond.
Yep.
You know, it feels a whole lot more like the Adam West show than it does, say, even like as even the Michael Keaton stuff. You know, it's much more camp. Much more camp.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I actually just pulled up a list of Batman comic titles. List of Batman comics. Yeah, I'm not going to go through.
Yeah, I was going to say, settle in, peeps.
Yeah, there are bazillions of them. And
mine
this
was,
doesn't...
Go ahead.
Like, this list doesn't even take into account, like, the one-shots. Because there's just as many one-shots as he had actual series.
Right. Does it have the mini-maxi series, like Long Halloween, Year One, that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you've got, I mean, you've got World's Finest, you've got Batman, you've got Detective Comics, you've got Brave and the Bold, Batman Family, Legends of the Dark Knight, Shadow of the Bat, Batman Adventures, and then, you know, you scroll down a little bit further, and you've got all these annuals that they list, and then the miniseries, Dark Knight Returns, The Cult, World's Finest, Robin, Joker's Wild, Gotham Knights, Sword of Azrael, all that stuff. Long Halloween, Gordon's Law, Year One. And then we go into the one-shots.
Pork, fried shrimp, kebab.
Yep.
Shrimp.
Killing Joke, Gotham by Gaslight, Bride of the Demon, Full Circle, Digital Justice, Holy Terror, Batman and Dracula, Red Rain. God, I totally forgot Digital Justice.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, my brain, thank God, made me forget that. There was a, let me find out when that came out. There was a time in the late 80s, early 90s, I think.
Okay, so that's a 50-50 time in comic books.
Yeah.
It either changed the world or destroyed the industry. That's really your only lines.
Well, this was supposed to be like the cutting edge. So this came out in 1990.
Okay.
It was a graphic novel published by DC Comics in 1990 in both hardback and paperback, written and illustrated by Pepe Moreno using entirely computer hardware, software, and techniques. The story takes place outside the regular DC continuity,
okay.
But it is not an Elseworlds title.
Let me see if I understand this correctly. They used a computer to put together a comic book? This is devilry, sir. Sheer devilry.
I just messaged it over to you, the wiki.
Oh, fantastic.
And it was like... So remember when we did that thing on Dragonlance?
Oh, yes.
And we're like, hey, you know, this animation is amazing 1980s animation for a movie that was filmed in 2000. Batman Digital Justice was kind of the same way. Like, for a 1990s graphic novel, this, you know, artwork is, like, spot on 1982. It was...
Oh, wow.
It was just not very cutting edge.
I just pulled up some pages.
Yeah.
So what's interesting is that this... A year... You know, a bunch of years ago, when I... would go to cons a lot as a fan, not doing IHL. There was always one or two people who were like, hey, we are making comics with computers. And it was just somebody with whatever the 3D art software of the day was. And it has a very specific style.
Yes.
It looks like your first tutorial on 3D, you know, Object Manager or whatever the hell the software was, where everything is... Like, you can count the polygons, and you're not going to get above 100.
Yeah.
Like, that's some fun stuff.
Some of the pages don't look completely terrible.
Okay.
But they look very 80s. And then other pages, like that one that you just texted me, Or the one with, like, the Batman looking at the bat screen with all the different Batman faces where, yes, like you said, you can see the edge of every polygon and every panel. It's just, I don't know.
The ones that I don't picture, I sent just for the audience, it looks very much like a Joker head and a Batman head in Max Headroom land.
Yes.
And given this was the early 90s, not shocking.
And then there's this other picture I have here of Commissioner Gordon, who looks remarkably like Wilfred Brimley, talking to apparently Bruce Wayne, but he's got kind of his back to us. And just the art style and the bubbles make it look like a cutscene from like a Final Fantasy II.
Right.
Or like an Elder Scrolls kind of thing, where it's just... it was something by Squaresoft, and this is what happens. The characters show up, and they stay in this position, and the word bubbles will change as the conversation goes on, but the picture never moves.
The more I look at these pictures, the more I'm amazed, and the more I want to read this book. Because even, like, the young Tufts look exactly like Back to the Future 2 young Tufts.
Yes.
Let's send that one over to you.
Yeah, it was a heck of a book, and I had forgotten about it until I had seen that, and now I wish. Yep, I was just looking at that picture.
Batman can't go over water without power.
Oh dear Lord.
So my big Batman time wasn't the comics; it was the animated series, because I'm like that wheelhouse. That
sure.
That was the thing. It was 1992 that came out. And it was like the Fox 5 home from school hour. You had yourself Batman. You had yourself some Power Rangers. You had Animaniacs. You had Tiny Toons. Why would I ever leave my couch?
Yeah, exactly.
That cartoon, I mean, it won awards for how good it was.
Sure.
I'll pull up which right now Mr. Stevens is going, it's this episode.
Yeah. I was never a Batman the Animated Series kind of guy.
Oh, really?
Because I think I was out of my comic phase by then, so I just, it wasn't anything that I really had gotten involved with and into. Don't get me wrong, I'm not crapping on it. I hear it's amazing. There are people out there that, say that... that the Joker in that is the best interpretation of the Joker ever, whether it's print, whether it's live action, whether it's animated. And that's great. It's almost like a Doctor Who kind of thing, you know, like he's not my Joker, but I'm not gonna defy anybody who says that's their favorite incarnation of it.
FYI, it was Robin's Reckoning, Part 1. It won for Outstanding Animated Program 93. That's all.
Okay. And maybe because that wasn't my type of Joker, it was the reason that the animated Killing Joke really didn't sit well with me.
Oh, no.
Reasons.
I was going to say, as someone who was, that was my Batman, the animated Killing Joke has a lot against it.
So if we remove the original, if we remove the beginning 16 minutes of the animated Killing Joke and just get down to brass tacks where the story starts in the comic, I think the biggest reason I had an issue with it, and it's kind of the same reason a lot of people who are diehard Tolkien fans had an issue with Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings, it's that I've read that book so many times.
Mm-hmm.
I hear in my head what they sound like and how they're talking. When the Joker sings that fucking made-up song as he's putting Gordon through the funhouse, I had my own music playing in my head. I had the cadence. I could sing you that song without having the book in front of me. But then when the animated show did it, or the animated movie did it, and they're going through and singing it, I'm going, that's not how that song goes. Because that's not how the song went for 10 years in my head.
My Tannis doesn't sound like Kiefer Sutherland.
Exactly.
Yep. Or no, I'm sorry, he was Raceland.
It was Raceland. It's good your Tannis doesn't sound like Kiefer Sutherland. Because he wasn't Kiefer Sutherland.
I was Lorana.
You're eating maggots, Lorana.
That's next month. That's the that's this month.
That is this month.
Yeah. Look, next week, 2 weeks. Anyway, no, wait, we're recording this for, so it was last couple weeks.
Wah, 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 wah.
See, this new schedule screws up my whole, like, we're not recording it for tomorrow.
When our meta out metas our meta. Yo, yeah. Dog, I heard you like some meta with your meta.
So meta, even this Ooh. Acronym.
Yeah, exactly.
So, the Batman series went on, and there's a really great YouTube channel that goes through and does the history of how these things sort of came to be.
Right.
And it had, like, I would highly recommend, even though that it wasn't your Batman, go try watching The Mask of the Phantasm.
Oh, that I've seen, because I read the graphic novel.
Okay. And the Mr. Freeze one, which I'll pull up the name for. Crap, of course. Is it Heart of Ice? It might be Heart of Ice.
Okay.
Where it's like this gorgeous origin story of Mr. Freeze. And it's... The cartoon did something that I find is super hard to do in comics, and it makes me care for the villains. That show does such a great job of making each of the villains feel very alive, even shitty characters, like even shitty villains like what's his face with the puppet.
Oh yeah.
Character, I never would have thought Mr. Freeze would be an interesting character, but this whole story about his wife and how he's trying to save her and everything, it made the comics come alive as far as that stuff goes.
But that's happened in comics too, and it's one of those things where it makes not only Batman, but Gotham and the whole world
yes.
that they're building around it just feel that much deeper. Like, yeah, the fucking the puppeteer guy, the marionette guy, who the fuck cares about him? But in Nightfall, when you realize he's talking to Bane, and he's got the puppet in one hand and like a sock puppet on the other hand, and they're arguing, and the puppet pulls out a real gun, and you're just like, this is some dark shit out of a character that probably nobody knows who the fuck this guy is, unless you're a diehard Batman fan.
The ventriloquist.
Yes.
I looked it up. And Arnold Wesker.
Okay.
Yeah, and the only thing that made me care about Egghead was that it was done by Vincent Price.
Right.
So I'm just moving on. But yeah, a good story, and there was quite a few during the animateds that... So good. So what else you got? Where do you go in your Batverse? Do we go movies?
Well, if you had to pick, I'll call them books, whether it's collected like Nightfall, which, you know, the collected graphic novel, or whether it was a one shot. If you had to give your top five Ooh. Batman books, like right off the cuff, right now, what would they be? They don't. And in hindsight, you can go, yeah, you know what? I would totally change that. But right now, on the spot, what would they be?
I think they're going to be super obvious ones because I've always just sort of hit the best of. So it's going to be Long Halloween. It's going to be Year One. It's going to be Gotham by Gaslight. It's going to be See, I don't want to say. You know what? I will say Arkham Asylum, even though I haven't read it in so long, I don't know whether I love it, but I'm sure I do. And I need a fifth. I need a fifth. I want to, like, go run over and look at my book collection to see what I got. because I don't want to say I actually don't love The Dark Knight Returns as much as the rest of the universe. So, maybe Justice League Tower of Babel.
Okay. I think mine are a lot more mainstream than yours.
Okay, please.
Thank you for saying Gotham by Gaslight. I love that book.
They were so good.
I thought it was so fucking amazing. Gotham by Gaslight, Killing Joke is obviously on there. Son of the Demon, I absolutely love. I loved the painted art style. And kind of the lack of comic panels in the traditional sense. Holy Terror was awesome. Elseworlds book. And I'm going to say Nightfall. That story arc was just really cool. A follow-up would be Hush. As like an honorable mention.
You know what? You're right. I have one big problem with Hush, but it's a gorgeous book.
Yeah. It's a very gorgeous book.
My only problem with Hush is that it goes, hey, here's this new character. I wonder who the villain is.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the only flaw in it. Everything else is gorgeous. Like, the art in it's phenomenal.
Yeah. I want to pull up.
I'm going to say that you want to know what your list, I feel like, I think mine is the hipster bat guy list, where yours is very much the, no. Dick, I've read Batman, because like, I looked at Son of the Demon, I threw it up on my screen, and I know I've seen this book, it's been on a shelf somewhere, you know, at a comic show, I've never read it.
Just the artwork on it, I love the kind of like watercolor colored pencils kind of feel that it has.
Oh yeah, it's very heavy metal-ish.
But just that so many panels are not actual panels, you know, it's just, it's, we're going to put art on a page. It doesn't fall into, you know, six squares or nine squares or whatever it is. But one of my favorite lines from that is right near the very beginning. He ends up in a warehouse. Guys are trying to shoot at him. And he's kind of, you know, stalking in the shadows, waiting for one dude to, like, run out of bullets or, you know, change his clip or whatever. And the line he does is, there are seven ways for me to disarm this assailant. Four of them disarm with minimal contact. Three of them are lethal. One of them, and like, he comes out with like a straight fingered punch to the guy's Adam's apple, and he goes, "Really hurts." And I'm like, "Oh, this is probably as close to evil as Batman gets." Sure, I could disarm you with minimal contact, but I really want to hurt you.
I don't kill. But that doesn't mean I don't make it hurt.
Yeah. But, this is one of my favorite pictures, too. Let me see. I'll message this over to you. It's basically Batman and Ra's, okay, playing chess. But it kind of gives you not only the feel for the epicness of the story, but of the layout of Ra's fortress. Did I just send you that same thing again?
Yeah, you did. You sent me the same link. Thankfully, this is a visual medium. yep, for me, my Batman experiences are all sort of the mainstream, the very mainstream ones. You know, the comics I listed are the ones that when, I don't know, somebody gets a Bat movie, they're like, oh, I read that, and that's what I'm basing it all on. Now, neither of us shockingly mentioned Dark Knight Returns or Dark Knight Rises.
Dark Knight Returns.
That's what I said. Yeah, but then the Dark Knight Returns 2, or whatever it was, the second one. Dark Knight Returns.
Electric. I'm not ever sure that I ever read the second one.
Yeah.
The first one with the original four were just amazing. And that influenced not only my opinion of Batman, but even my own personal art stuff that I was doing at the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's considered, you know, that year, or 85 or 86, it was that year that that book came out, and the same as Watchmen. And
yeah,
it moved comics.
Yeah.
You know, the month after those books came out, everybody was drawing a little darker.
Yeah, I had fabric paints at the time, so I was doing, like, jeans, I was doing t-shirts for friends and stuff. So I had a pair of jeans where the whole right leg, was that dark blue and black kind of mottled sky with a giant lightning bolt just cracking down the leg, and then the big silhouette Batman above my knee.
It's iconic.
My friend, I had a friend Joe who was a very Batman and Superman fan, so I did the one scene where Batman's got the power armor on and he's just completed the roundhouse and it looks like he's knocking Supes' teeth out. And then underneath it said, "Today would be a good day to die." It's just that art style was very very well suited for that book. And it was, like you said, it was one of those books where it left an indelible mark on comics.
And I haven't reread it in, you know, I probably read Watchmen last right after the movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
It's been even longer since I read Dark Knight Returns. And I found that books like that, that I go back to, like classic books that the world says this is the thing to read.
Right.
I find that as I get older, I appreciate them more. Like, I didn't like Preacher. I didn't like the ending of Preacher, for example, which is, I love everything about Preacher. I just didn't like the ending.
Right.
And then I reread it a couple years back and went, oh, I'm an idiot. This is fucking brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have a feeling if I was to go back to Dark Knight Returns, I'd feel the same way.
Yeah, I think one of the other big things about Dark Knight Returns as the comic was you had that redheaded chick as Robin.
Yep, yep, with the roller skates.
And that just opened up a whole fucking can of worms. Because he's only 55 in this book. You know, and I don't think it was an Elseworlds book. It was just like a one-shot standalone. So kind of like at that time in comics where if it didn't fit the regular continuity in DC, they would put it in an Elseworlds book to say it's almost like a what-if kind of thing. So this wasn't. So this really made people question, wait a minute, is the fucking current Robin going to die? Like, why is there a new Robin? Does he leave? What's going on? Like, it
call
really
this
made
number.
People, it really made people fucking question a lot of what was going on.
And I don't even know when that, I mean, at the end of the day, thankfully comics are a medium where, you know, continuity comes and goes as you want it to. And since then, the DC universe has rebooted 6 times, so.
Yeah.
Batman first movie, Tim Burton.
Michael Keaton?
Yes.
Best of them all. No, there is no discussion. I don't care what your opinion is. The correct answer is the best of them all.
You want to know what? I think I have to agree with you as far as Michael Keaton goes. There are characters, there are actors who have done Bruce better than Michael Keaton did Bruce. And I think there are Batmans that I've enjoyed more than Michael Keaton as Batman. But I think Michael Keaton was the best of both.
I agree. And when that first movie came out, I went to see it with a bunch of my high school friends I had in high school. And I had made the joke, like, if you read Batman comics, there is no actor that exists that can play both the way he's portrayed in the comics. Because you literally would need, like, a Michael Keaton or maybe Val Kilmer. Or maybe current George Clooney, not the actual George Clooney who played Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe even like a Julian Sands kind of attitude for Bruce Wayne in an Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of body.
Right.
You know? Because he's not drawn like all lean and lanky and stuff. He's got some mass to him. And there's not an actor that exists. Maybe now Tom Hardy. But you know what? That ship has already sailed.
Yeah.
I can't see him as playing Batman. But yes, portraying both sides of the coin, I it's got to be Michael Keaton. Because they made it work. They knew he wasn't the ripped guy, so that's why kind of they gave him that suit that was kind of the body armor on it. To explain, hey, this is why he looks this way. He didn't look that way in real life, but we're going to make it work.
Yeah, and to the same, I think I really enjoyed Christian Bale's Bruce Wayne. I think he could have been in a fantastic, just a Bruce Wayne movie. I would watch Christian Bale in that. Hell, I think for as much as like the movie is shit, I think George Clooney could have at the time pulled off a really stylish go head to head Bruce Wayne. But I don't love Christian Bale's Batman, although I enjoy what he did do it, and obviously George Clooney's Batman is George Clooney's Batman.
Yeah, that's why I said I think Clooney now, or like Ocean's 11 Clooney.
That's my man.
could play a good Bruce Wayne. I don't think the Clooney in that Batman movie was the right Clooney for that Bruce Wayne.
No. There's nothing correct about that movie, but that does not change the fact that I still have seen it like a dozen times.
Right.
That movie is so much fun to not hate watch, but like MST3K watch. If any of you do riff tracks and you haven't seen the Batman and Robin riff tracks, please do yourself a favor. Because
at that point in the franchise, it wanted to tap into the camp.
Yeah, 100%. And what's interesting is I think Batman Forever gets a bad rap. I think it's an enjoyable movie. It ain't a great movie by any stretch.
But, is that the one with Jim Carrey?
No. I was going to say no, Val Kilmer. But yes, Jim Carrey and Tommy Lee Jones. Both playing the Joker. But I think that movie is... Because I'm not as big of a fan of the second Bat movie, Batman 2, the second Michael Keaton one. I think great stuff in it, but I don't think it's a great movie.
Oh, sure. Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yup. Oh, Danny DeVito. Oh.
And Christopher Walken.
Mm-hmm.
DeVito was great. Except for the very end.
Remind me.
I didn't need the fucking giant penguins in the cave next to the even giant or rubber duck. Just right. Kind of like fucking, you know, walking him into the water. That was over the top.
Well, and that sort of paints the picture for what's to come. Because later you have Mr. Freeze walking around his igloo hut in bunny slippers. What? But yeah, I think the Joel Schumacher. Shut up, ice hole.
Chill out.
He doesn't say that, but I've always wanted him to. Because he basically becomes a villain from The Running Man.
Yeah. He becomes his own worst enemy.
Yeah. Now you're absolute zero.
It was, yeah. The second one, like you said, there were some good parts to it, but overall, not a better movie. And seeing as it was kind of, I'll say one of, because I know Superman had come out before it and had a number of sequels.
Yeah.
But it was, apart from the Christopher Reeve Superman, I can't think of another superhero movie that came out that had that kind of impact and became that kind of franchise.
No.
And it kind of started the problem that most of them have continued to commit going forward, which is, hey, we've got a really good hero, we've got a really good villain. For the sequel, let's have a really good villain, or a really good hero, and like 9 really good villains. Like, they always need to up the number as right. opposed to just coming up with somebody different.
The sort of benefit, the issue that I heard when it came to the second Bat movie was that they said, we're not going to be able to top Jack Nicholson. The only way we're going to even fucking come close is if we get 2 reasonably AAA level stars, because maybe then we'll equal the 4-star Jack Nicholson, especially with what he did with that. Campy as it looks, like in hindsight, campy as fuck. But at the time, it was the grittiest thing we'd ever seen.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Somebody made a great point. I don't remember who it was. It might have been listening to Adventure Zone. It was definitely a podcast. Somebody made the point that Joker goes into the art gallery playing a song about the Joker, which means at some point in time, the Joker commissioned Prince to write a song for it.
See, no, I never knew that song was about the Joker.
I'm pretty sure you're black and white, red and green. It's the funkiest thing. Yeah, it's totally about the Joker.
Okay.
I had to, like, rewind my brain. Am I thinking of the wrong song?
I guess that's because I didn't really pay attention to the lyrics too much right. during the movie.
Are you slapping the painting?
Yeah. Crap, 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 crap. Ah.
But yeah, I will go back and watch those two, the Clooney and the Kilmer ones, the quote unquote bad ones. Go rewatch the Val Kilmer let me think. Is the Val? No, I'm thinking it's actually the Clooney one. The Clooney one where it's Robin who goes down into the dark Gotham alleyway.
Holy twisted metal, Batman.
Right. That aside, there is a scene where he goes and fights some young toughs on his motorbike. And the fight choreography and the set design of that scene is... It's like warriors on an acid trip. But it's pretty fucking cool. The movie shit, we all agree, but take a step back and look at it for what went into it, and there's a lot of fun to be had.
Okay.
Bat nipples.
Yeah. Yeah, there is that.
Yeah, I mean, any argument I may make pro bad Batman movies is usually defeated with one simple phrase. Two words. Silver dollar bat nipples.
Yeah.
What about what are your thoughts on the Bale Bale movies?
I like them. The frustrating thing with a lot of superhero movies now is like fans of comic books
are annoying.
Yes. Well, so are fans of everything. True. Except for fans of our show. Fans of comic books, like, I don't want to see somebody say, oh, this movie's based on The Killing Joke, because there's a 4-minute scene in it that kind of loosely, with a different color palette and actors and gender swapped, and kind of looks like a panel from The Killing Joke.
Mm-hmm.
No. If you're going to do a fucking live-action Killing Joke movie, do a fucking live-action Killing Joke movie. If you're going to do a live-action Nightfall movie, then do the fucking Nightfall movie. Don't take, well, I want to take this piece here, but I didn't like this other set, then fucking stop. And it's this kind of just borrowing piece by piece to make stuff that really kind of, it does annoy me. And you know what? At the end of the day, I have no fucking say in it, because I'm not the guy funding it, I'm not the guy writing it, I'm not the guy filming it.
What?
But that's kind of one of the things where, you know, when they said the Dark Knight Returns was the Killing Joke, I was like, where?
Yeah, I don't see that.
I don't know. That's like not even remotely close. At least have a carnival in there. You know,
say the word joke.
Yeah. Not that it wasn't an amazing movie. And just like the third one, you know, yeah, sure, we know that the third one was based on Nightfall, but it was so amazingly loosely based on Nightfall.
Right, and I think, I don't think I ever heard anybody, now obviously the third one has its nods to Nightfall. I don't think I ever heard the Killing Joke commentary, but that aside, I'm very forgiving when it comes to, like, hey, director, writer, whomever, who may not have as huge of a birth of knowledge of the source material. I dig that you're probably going to pick some of the greatest hits. As long as you give it some justice and you do it right, I'm okay with it. But you're correct. If they called it Nightfall, it would be a disappointment. But since they didn't call Rise is the Killing Joke, I'm pretty okay with it. I super enjoyed all three of those movies for exactly what they were. I walked away from them going, cool, I understand why the third movie went the way it did, because it was supposed to be a different movie, but obviously Heath Ledger. Take them as a bubble. Don't try and read too deep into them. Recognize that they too have their big flaws. But as a, let's look at this world from a different angle, from a less neon-coded angle and a more, hey, this is a fucked-up world angle, I'm fine with it. I think the only thing that annoyed me was the direction they wanted to take it afterwards. I would have been super thrilled with a Joseph Gordon-Levitt continued series.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was, he didn't want to do that. They didn't want to do that. They just wanted to take the pause, stop it. Now we're going to go into whatever the new Batman thing is, Suicide Squad-y, Ben Affleck, whatever.
See, now here I'm reading that Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy is based on Year One, Dark Knight Rises, and Dark Knight Strikes Again.
Okay.
which I like better than what was going around when it first came out.
But, that's probably just because it was such a different, brutal Joker.
Yeah, he was amazing in it, though.
I mean, it is such a bummer. The Heath Ledger is a bummer because we saw what was probably his first great film in a fun career, in a career that had some really great movies, but his first, like, on the map, top of the food chain Hollywood movie.
Right.
And then he's gone. Shit.
The things that made some of that brilliant were the shit that you didn't see. So, like, example, they hook you in with the magic trick with the pencil, and I'm going to make it disappear.
Right.
And, you know, he does it, and then he immediately continues his conversation like he didn't miss a beat. And, like, it took people in the audience that I went and saw it with, like, literally 5 seconds to go, oh, like, I just realized what happened. They did that same trick again towards the end.
Okay.
Because he's got that gigantic pyramid full of money.
Yes.
And he's got that dude duct taped to the chair at the top of it. And they have, like, an 8-minute conversation. And then the camera pans down, and the Joker has an argument with one of his henchmen. And then he takes a whiskey bottle, and he puts the wick in it, and he lights it, and he throws it on the money, and they walk away. And you have to think for a couple seconds, there's a fucking guy on top of that pile of money that he just lit on fire. But they did such a great job of, we're going to distract you from that guy he was just talking to long enough that your brain is going to take a little bit, and then it's going to hit you like a kick in the dick, and you're going to go, oh God, there's somebody up there. It was so well filmed.
And the more you think about it, like, he's going to be sitting there a while.
Yes. Unable to do shit. And the practical effects, too. When they flipped that semi, that wasn't CGI. That wasn't green screen. That was...
that was a lot of money.
I want to flip a semi. Okay, well, we can film this, and then we can edit it. No, I want to flip a semi.
Okay, well, we have the Hot Wheels mini models. We'll just put it on the soundstage.
You're not understanding me. And, like, they kind of had that conversation with the effects crew. Because when he said, yeah, I want to flip a semi, like, ass over tea kettle. And they were like, cool, we can kind of film this, and then we'll put up a green. He's like, no, you're not understanding. And they went, oh. Oh. Let me call in the other team. Like, let me call in the guys with the cables and the telephone poles that shoot out the bottom of the vehicles to flip them.
Because I have Legos and a fucking laptop.
I have a MacBook Pro and a Happy Meal toy that looks like an 18-wheeler.
And a degree in computer design. So
exactly.
Let's call in the Mythbusters.
Whew.
The Joker, the Heath Ledger Joker,
yes,
was as compared. So if we look at the previous Jokers we've had, because we have Mark Hamill and the animated series, which is very much the cartoony. Well, let's even go back further. We have Cesar Romero as the super campy. Then we have Mark Hamill as the middle ground between psychopath and campy.
Right.
We have Nicholson, he leans back into the campy, but he's still brutal. And then you have Heath Ledger. Like, all of them are in, all of those other ones are in a very similar Venn diagram circle. And then just, like, glancing, kissing that circle is Heath Ledger's Joker.
Yeah.
Playing him as a crazy, psychopathic, lying anarchist was, I understand why people were put off by the makeup and unsure of what he was going to be like. The internet of the day was very anti, especially because
he was
pretty boy Heath Ledger.
Sure.
He's 10 Things I Hate About You guy.
And the funny thing is, too, is that you mentioned that let's take the animated one out for just a second.
Sure.
When we talk about Cesar Romero, when we talk about Jack Nicholson, the thing that them and Heath Ledger's Joker all had in common is we have no background on this guy. We don't know who this person really is. We don't know what they did beforehand. You know what I mean? We just see this snapshot of what they are now. And yes, the Romero one was kind of campy. The Jack Nicholson one was brutal, but also very campy. The whole dancing in the street and the fucking elongated barrel on the gun and everything else.
My favorite scene in the movie.
And the Smilex get Bob, gun. But Ledger was just like, he was what he described himself as. He was a primal force of nature. He was chaos given form. And it was such a much darker departure that it made it that much more eerie of his character that, who the fuck is this guy? We have no idea. He's got no fingerprints. He's got no tags on his shirts. There's nothing at all to identify this guy. They didn't even care to try to identify who it was when Nicholson and Romero were doing it. It was just, well, he's the Joker. But here, like, they went, it was the gritty realism of the Christian Bale Batmans shines through because they were trying to figure out who the fuck this guy is, and, like, they have zero idea. And that's what made it even scarier.
You make a fantastic point about the repeated tricks that those movies did, because they did, and not dismissing your point, I'll get back to it in a second. They did the same trick in the first movie that they did with the second, with the bait and switches.
Right.
The beginning, through the first half of that first movie, Ra's al Ghul is, you know, ancient Chinese guru, and you're like, oh.
Yeah, and then he turns out to be Qui-Gon Jinn.
God damn it. And I remember in the theater going, that's really weird to cast him as the lackey.
Yeah.
And then when they reveal, you go, oh, I'm a dick. Okay. But they did the same thing at the beginning of Dark Knight Rises, where the beginning of the movie, Joker's is thug number four until the moment he needs to be the Joker.
Yep.
Sorry, but back to your point.
And they did the same thing with Talia, too.
Yes.
Which was terrible, because she's such an amazing character. They did her such a huge disservice.
So, have you done any of the Batman video games, the Arkhams? I know it's not your era of games.
I have not.
I'm going to tell you that aside from the fact that one of the things that makes those games super, super impressive is their fighting system, which I won't get too deep into the weeds on, but it's a very like, okay, this guy's coming at me, all you have are like two buttons. You have punch and dodge, and then everything else is extra. As long as you time your buttons, guy's swinging, a little exclamation point appears above his head or a little yellow like burst, dodge, swing, hit, punch. Point to the next guy, punch. Point to the next guy, punch. And like Batman goes around in this very fluid, it looks like a comic book come to life with the fight system.
I've heard that from a lot.
It changed. There's games now. Most games with a comic book style thing are replicating that style. The Spider-Man game that I was playing, totally right. The same system. The Shadow of Mordor, same system. But there's something beautiful about those games because you start game one, you are in Arkham Asylum. You start the game getting brought in as Bruce Wayne into Arkham Asylum, and you have to kind of fight your way out. The second one, Gotham City gets shut down because of gang wars or whatever.
Right.
And so now you have a whole city. And then the third one is pretty much the same, in fact, but you now have the car and the city's a lot bigger and a little bit more expansive. But they made them these living, breathing Gothams where you're flying through and you hear thugs down on the street like punching some dude, so you swoop in. When I started playing Batman's Arkham City, like you will sit in front of your TV riveted because you are fucking Batman flying through the sky.
That's very cool.
And all the villains are very hush-like, actually. They took a lot. They clearly took a lot from the Jim Lee design.
Okay.
If you get a chance, I know you got yourself the X-Bone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there any of them are out, but at least one of them is probably backwards compatible at this point. Do yourself a favor.
I think there's one or two of them out there.
Do yourself a favor. You will have a good... Once you figure out the fight system, and there is a learning curve. But storyline alone, totally worth it.
My learning curve days are behind me, dude. I had this conversation with him on Facebook. I picked up WWE 2K18.
Oh, that's funny. Go ahead.
I played Triple H against Aiden something. Ansel Adams, like some dude who's like the lowest starred wrestler they have in their roster.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
And dude beat the shit out of Triple H in like 48 seconds.
So
it's like, hey, punch, kick, headlock, great, cool, drop him to the ground, try to pin him, 1-2, he kicks out, and then I couldn't fucking touch him for the rest of the game.
You say that, and recently there was a sale, and I picked up WWE 2K18 myself, and I'm going to tell you, I had the same experience for about 2 hours.
Like, okay, I get that most of the stuff is, you know, reversals, you know, or countering. My timing isn't that fucking bad. Like, I would stand there and wait for him to come and hit me, and I would cradle the controller in, like, my elbow and the palm of my left hand, and I would just whip my finger on the fucking trigger on the other side, and they're like, oh, too slow. I'm like, go fuck yourself. I started countering his move when he was on the entrance ramp. It was so annoying.
Yeah, I understand thoroughly.
I uninstalled it. I don't even play it anymore.
I want to love it. This is diverting probably into next week's episode. But anyway, I want to love a wrestling game. And I haven't in about 20 years.
In your house.
All right, well, let's not. The one where Undertaker shoots green skulls.
I was going to say, where Vader's hand literally turns into a fist made out of ham.
Bulldog turns into an actual bulldog.
That's so terrible. Oh.
So I think that pretty much covers the bat.
Yeah, I'm not going to ask what we missed, because we know we've missed a lot of it.
There's so much!
Tell us what you would have liked to hear us talk about that we didn't, and talk about it with us.
We did hit us up on the. We missed Alfred, we missed tons of other villains. The Riddler, who's my personal favorite, shut up, you're wrong.
No, the Riddler's a great villain. What I didn't like with the Jim Carrey version was that they made him, like, all-powerful.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not talking about Jim Carrey.
The Riddler... Yeah, the Riddler is great when he stays in his lane, but they do to him what they did with the Ventriloquist and make him fucking dangerous.
Yes.
Because it's all about how he's written in the situations that you put him in.
Yeah. I'm not... When I say the Riddler's my favorite, I don't mean Jim Carrey.
No. But still, it was just an example. He can be written really well, or he can be written really terribly. Yes, that's true for every comic book character. I know that. Thank you.
I'm with you. I understand.
But he can be, like, demonically devious when put in the right set of circumstances.
Yeah, I'm not even going to try and go further on what you just said, because it was perfection, sir. We missed Gotham. That's another one, which I enjoyed the first two seasons. I didn't watch anything past. I enjoyed it.
I didn't miss Gotham.
Yeah, I didn't love it, but I enjoyed it.
And there were. You know what? Since you brought it up, I'm going to give you 30 seconds on Gotham. So here's my biggest pet peeve.
Is it the ages?
Everybody, no, it's not the ages. Everybody who ends up becoming a villain of Batman down the road, they all live in the same fucking tenement building. It's
basically this, yeah.
Like, what I would have been okay with was, hey, we've got this guy that we really can't understand, so we went to our sister branch over in, you know, fucking Ocean City or whatever, and we got this really deep code cracker, Nygma, to come over and help us with this. Not, oh yeah, oh, he's one flight up to the left. That was fucking annoying. And the other thing that killed me, I don't even know what episode it was, but it's like a fucking hot dog vendor, and the dude goes to buy a hot dog, and he handcuffs him, and the next thing you know, there's like fucking 14, 40-foot parade float balloons floating this dude and the hot dog... And I'm where the fuck were the balloons? He did not hide them in that fucking hot dog cart. What the fuck? Like, that kind of stupid suspension of disbelief where you just go, oh, okay. I couldn't.
And
it was fucking painful.
And when you compare it to the other DC Universe shows, Flash, Green Arrow, those shows lean in to what they are. They lean into the camp. They very much know, look, we're a comic book show. We're not gonna make gritty here. We're gonna make fun. There's gonna be shit here that doesn't make any sense. Just go with it. Yeah. Gotham tries to be better than that. So when it does something completely off the kilter, you go, what? Stop it. Just
what
stop.
Stop. This is not who you are.
But so yeah, as Rob said, please tell us who your favorite Batman villain was. Who do we miss? What portions of the Batverse do you want to appear in Batman 2, which will be coming out the week after the last James Bond episode?
Oh, yeah.
What else
hit
you got
to
add?
At STSTcast on the Twitter, facebook.com/somethingsomethingcast. Somethingcast.com has all the buttons and widgets and doohickeys and levers and beebles to get in touch with us however you want to. I don't know. Grasping at straws here.
Yeah, pretty much. So you know where to get us. Get us there. So with that, I am James Hatton.
I'm Podcast Rob.
We'll see you guys next time.
Something, something, something.
Okay, here we go.